Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. Here it is August 14th, mid-August already. You know, I feel like, I feel like it's middle of last week because, my goodness, we've been out of power, okay? I'm so glad the station has power. I actually had been traveling around and I was afraid there was no power at the station, so I was able to tune in, although for a while the darn the feed was not working for that, I Love Radio or whatever it is. But at any rate, it is working. That you can listen to us on things like TuneIn Radio and live stream it too. So that's how a lot of people listen to us, because I know that I have listeners in different states, and there's no way they can get our terrestrial signal from there. We're not like WJR or something. So it is good that we have alternative ways to hear the station when you're out and about, and also when the weather is inclement and things, your power's out and stuff like that. So at any rate, let's look at no Michigan gun shows today. Can you believe that? I don't understand that part of it. Although maybe we'll fire up in the September kind of time frame. I am starting to get things from the Michigan DNR about, deer permits and things like that. So we're coming around to that time again. Ohio has one show in Cincinnati, Sharonville area, the Sharonville Convention Center. A couple in Missouri, the Harrison Gun Show at the Northwest Arkansas District Fairgrounds in Harrison, Arkansas. And the Neosha Gun Show in Neosha, Missouri. And actually, we have a New York one, but it's not really in New York. It's the Lewis Run Volunteer Fire Department Gun Show. And it's in Lewis Run at the Lewis Run Volunteer Fire Department Station Number 6. So what a great thing to do at a fire department, okay? Let's see. I was going to mention that there is a pin shoot. And last week, I think there was a handgun pin shoot. This week is pistol caliber carbines and .22 rifle pin shoot at Tri-County Sportsman's League. So head on out there on Sunday to take part in that. That would be a lot of fun. We did get new numbers on CPLs, and I was disappointed that it didn't come out until August 9th of all. I mean, come on, guys. What? It's supposed to be August 1st or 2nd at the latest if it falls on a Sunday or something, but no. You guys took a whole week? What, you just forget about it? Somebody said, isn't there something I'm supposed to be doing this week? Oh, yeah, I got to post the new CPL numbers. Maybe it's the Delta variant that's causing this now, so we'll have to see. And it was only about 2,800 new CPLs, and that's kind of low. We've been averaging higher than that, but we're at 758,655 for the total current level of active CPL holders. Okay, let's see. A couple of things. I did want to say I got a message from listener Naruto. Okay. And I think he's a listener. Maybe he pulls it off the web or off the website. And I don't know exactly how he got it to me, but it says, "Hi, I saw your gel and bone test data, and I saw it was with a short 3.1 inch barrel. Is it possible for the bone test to be done with a, is it possible for a bone test to be done with the 135 grain HydroShock deep out of a 3.5 to 3.8 inch barrel, like the M&P 9 at 3.6 or the Canic TP 9 at 3.8. I'm thinking about using this round as my CCW, and will be carrying it in a 3.6-inch barrel. So it will be great to see if the expansion in the bone is reliable. Well, Naruto, let me tell you that chances are, and I think we only did the 9 with that inch barrel. I think that was Tom's SIG P365. But the thing is that if you are actually going with a slightly longer barrel, like to 3.6 inches, which is only a half inch longer, in reality, the benefit would be increased velocity. And the increased velocity is your friend when it comes to expansion. So I want to say that I'm sure that you can use that 135 grain HydroShock Deep in something with a 3.5 to 3.8 inch barrel, and you will actually have absolutely as good or maybe even slightly better performance. Because what happens is, and this is interesting with velocities and barrels. Now, when you fire a round down the barrel of any gun, okay, whether it's a pistol, whether it's a revolver, whether it's a rifle, anything, okay, what you're doing is you are expanding the gases from the powder that's in that cartridge. So the longer that it has to be able to expand, the faster velocities are generated by that projectile. Okay, to a point. Okay, there comes a point when it's fully expended, but for the most part, it's still expanding when that projectile exits the muzzle. And that's why you see things like a little bit of muzzle blast. That's why they have flash suppressors, because the gas is still expanding as that projectile comes out the muzzle. Now, a lot of times, and that's one of the things that if you are in the market for a round for concealed carry, let's say, you might look for a short-barreled version of that round. Dad, what are you talking about, short-barrel? The bullets are all the same, aren't they, Dick? Well, the projectiles are the same, the case is the same, the primer's the same, but they may well use a different powder on a short-barreled gun. Because the thing is that they know that you're only going to have anywhere from 2 to 4 inches to have that expansion. So they use a powder that will expand completely in the amount of time that it takes that projectile to traverse that 2 to 4 inch barrel. Okay. And so there's a couple of reasons for that. One is they want to get the maximum in terms of velocity, but also they don't want to have a whole lot of muzzle flash. And so that's like if it's nighttime and you're firing. Matter of fact, if you've ever fired a revolver or a pistol, a short-barreled gun at nighttime, you go, holy cow, the muzzle blast. It's like a flamethrower. And that's like a 357 Magnum in a 2.25-inch barrel is a flamethrower of a gun, okay? And actually, that can also apply to longer guns. Like I have a Mosin Nagant. I have a couple of them, but the a 9130 has a very long barrel. Okay, when you fire it, it is a has a little tiny bit of a muzzle flash. Okay, but if you fire it in an M44 or an M38, which has a shorter barrel on it, you have a whole lot of unburned powder that is still burning as the projectile exits the muzzle. So consequently, you got this huge flame, okay? Well, you don't want that if you're on in a pistol and it's nighttime and you're using it for self-defense, and you really don't want to blind yourself with a huge amount of muzzle flash. It could affect your ability to get back on target for a follow-up shot and things like that. So I would say, again, back to listener Naruto's question, the thing is that you can count on, with that slightly longer barrel, having equal slightly improved performance to what Tom's test showed. Okay? Let's see. Then I also got a message from listener Tom. And Tom said, and he says, by the way, part of the whammily, okay, of course you are. We all are. That we are the ones of us who are working here and the ones who listen, we're all part of the whammily. So he said, I hadn't heard this anywhere, and he sent me the link about a Winchester ammunition recall on 9mm Luger. And 115 grain. And what it is it actually shows you how many different kinds of ammo, brands and branding and stuff like that. They have Winchester White Box. They have USA Ready. They have, Winchester. They have it in jacketed hollow point. They have it in the bulk packages with what is called USA 9mm VP bulk pack, all sorts of different branding that they use, but all of them are being recalled. Now, it does not say why. Chances are it's either overcharged or undercharged, okay? But the thing is that they don't want to overcharge around because that could be a problem with overpressuring in especially an older gun, let's say an older 9mm. But you also don't want to undercharge one because what can happen is you could end up with a round that would get stuck in the barrel. And then what can happen is that the next round, the subsequent round that you fire, it will build up pressure very quick and probably also contact that next round, and you're going to end up exploding a barrel. And if that happens, that could cause all sorts of problems. That's one of the reasons you always wear eye protection and stuff like that, because you never know what could happen, okay? It's not just a good idea. It's an absolute idea, okay? Let's see. Now, this is interesting. Before I get to the part about Chicago and its number of homicides this year, there's a story that just came out yesterday, and I couldn't believe it, okay? This is this came out on the 12th, so that's 2 days ago. And y'all saw that last week in Chicago, there was a police officer who was killed, a 29-year-old woman who had just returned to service after having given birth, okay? So she, this destroys a family, and she was killed by a guy in a vehicle when she made a traffic stop. And, of course, you don't hear a whole lot about, except on the gun stations and the conservative stations, about when an officer is killed. Because no, that doesn't fit the story about the officer supposedly being racially biased against people of color, things like that. No. This is just an officer. It's no big deal. Oh, so it was a mother with a brand new baby. Ah, get over it, okay? Well, you know what? Here's what kills me is that the gun was fired by a guy who had gotten it through a straw purchase. He had had a friend buy him the gun and give it to him, or, you know, sell it to him. And that's a straw purchase. And he was purchasing it for a guy who couldn't otherwise legally buy a gun. So here is a U.S. magistrate ordered the alleged firearm straw purchaser, Jamal Denzi, released from federal custody on Wednesday. Breitbart News noted that the federal charges were brought against 29-year-old Denzi on Monday for allegedly buying a handgun and then passing it to 21-year-old Imante Morgan. Morgan allegedly shot and killed Chicago police officer Ella French with that handgun on Saturday night. CBS Chicago is now reporting that Denzi has been ordered released from federal custody on $4,500 bond. Now, why? I thought that, you know, we're all worried about the illegal guns coming into Chicago, and they're coming in from the nasty gun stores in Indiana and Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin. And well, no, this guy actually, the guy was from Indiana, but the thing is that he said, well, you know, he's a teacher's aide, and that means he's doing good things for the public. So no, we're going to let him out. Okay. Really? All you got to do is be a teacher's aide or something. You can go ahead and do a straw purchase and get off. Okay. I want to say this is the whole thing about the Chicago murders and the numbers of murders. Let me get to it here. Grim milestone. Chicago hits 500 homicides for the year. By the way, that's more than 38 states combined for all of 2019. Oh, how about that? Okay, Chicago so far this year has had 500 homicides and thousands of shootings. Okay, and it's more than 38 states tallied for the entire year of 2019. In fact, at the current rate, Murder City USA will likely reach homicide numbers not seen since the early 1990s. 30 years ago. How about that? Violent criminals and gang members, but I repeat myself, worked hard in July. They set the record for the third most homicides in a single month. Yay, go for it. Yeah, now they're keeping track of that. Okay, in the city's long history, Chicago recorded 110 homicide victims and an additional 517 people maimed by gunfire in July alone. Isn't that amazing? But no, we need more restrictive gun laws on the law-abiding people. You know, the ones who do a straw purchase. Wait a minute. That's against the law, I think. A straw purchase is against the law. But you guys let him out on a $4,500 bond because he's a good guy, because he's a teacher's aide. Okay. Now, they are going after... You know, like this was at a hotel, and I think it was at a Westin or something, at the W Hotel. The city declared war on law-abiding gun owners. Felons who are reoffended are treated with kid gloves. But what you want an example of going after a law-abiding gun owner? She notified a maid at the W Hotel, I think that's Westin or Windham Hill or something like that, saw a gun case in a hotel room she was cleaning a couple weeks ago. She notified her supervisor, who called police, and cops swooped in, and they confiscated two handguns and arrested the owner of the guns when he returned to the room. Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox charged the man with two felonies and assorted other crimes, okay? Well, so they made a big deal about that. What it turns out, let's see, covered the news conference, the mayor and the police, so they emceed that. Man arrested after guns were found in Chicago hotel room, and the mayor called them weapons of war. An Iowa man is facing two felony charges after a loaded handgun and rifle were found in his Chicago hotel room July 4th, where near, get this, they got to make the story sound a little worse, near where hundreds of families were celebrating the holiday. Okay, well, there might have been thousands of people who weren't celebrating the holiday, or maybe anywhere you would go on July 4th would be near where hundreds of families are celebrating a holiday. But no, this was a gun that was found in a Chicago hotel room near where hundreds of families were celebrating the holiday. Keegan Gregory Castile, 32, is charged with two felony counts of aggravated and unlawful use of a weapon. Okay, actually, it was loaded. Okay, you got to know, by the way, you got to know your gun laws when you go into another state. Okay, if he had been just transporting it from Iowa through Illinois and it was unloaded and locked in the rear compartment of his firearm or of his vehicle, he would have been okay. Let's see, Tuesday he was released after paying a portion of a $10,000 bond. Police said there was a handgun and a loaded .308 caliber rifle equipped with a laser and high-powered scope. Now we're not just talking about high caliber, large caliber, high powered guns. Now we got to talk about, oh, and it had a laser and a high powered scope. Okay. 5 rifle magazines were also found. The weapons were discovered by an employee of the W. Chicago Lakeshore Hotel who went to Castile's room to clean it. They were near a window in a very suspicious position, Brown said. The employee likely prevented a tragedy from happening. Okay, you want to know the real story here? Let's see. Castile's 12th-floor hotel room overlooked a portion of Chicago's Ohio Street beach along Lake Michigan and Navy Pier, prosecutors said during the hearing. You want the real story? Mr. Castile brought his girlfriend and a nice diamond ring to the Windy City with a devious plot to propose to the woman at the top of the Navy Pier Ferris wheel. Mr. Castile had a valid Iowa carry license and as such was perfectly legal to have as many handguns and magazines loaded or not inside his car within Illinois. I don't know about that. I'd have to check and see because I don't think Iowa has reciprocity with Illinois. I don't think Illinois has reciprocity with anybody, but I'll check that, okay? What's more, the hotel room served as his abode for the evening, and as such, guns there were perfectly legal. Sources told me that one of the guns was either an HK-91 support-braced pistol or a .308 caliber AR support-braced pistol. Okay, with a 12.5-inch barrel. His handgun mags, a 20-round 308 mags that so triggered the police and the mayor, were perfectly legal. Illinois concealed carry law exempts handgun magazines from local restrictions. So, yeah, what a very interesting thing. But, man, that sure made for a great story, didn't it? I get so tired of this anti-firearm stuff. Oh, by the way, I want to listen to your calls today. What's on your hip? I would like to talk about what shooting that you're doing. I was reading about some of our Olympians that did well in certain things. That was cool. Did you watch any of the Olympics? I'm just trying to think of what other things we're going to talk about today because I don't have a whole ton of show prep done. I normally have 50 pages of show prep, okay? Unfortunately, I have been out of power since Wednesday night, okay? And so that also means I've had very limited ability for internet searches and things like that. I've been camping out, so to speak. Well, actually, it's not camping out. I've got a generator. And the generator I have wired into the house with a what's called a transfer switch, which is a way you can safely power your home with a generator without worrying about backfeeding through the lines. That's something you don't want to do. Don't do a suicide cord if you're out there. What's a suicide cord, Dick? That's where somebody takes a cord that has 2 male prongs on one end, or male connections on both ends. One where you plug it into like your stove connection, if you have an electric stove or an electric dryer connection, and then the other into the cords off of your generator, and you backfeed it through the box. But many people, they don't remember to shut off the main, and when you don't shut off the main, you're trying to send power back through the lines, and those poor line workers out there will get knocked off of their ladders, okay? So don't do that. But you should hear in my neighborhood, there are generators everywhere, but most of us don't have the auto start kind. And I want to say, do you remember when we had a power outage that covered the whole eastern part of the United States, let's say, back in 2004? Well, I bought a generator back then, so that was 17 years ago, and I've used it a couple of times over that 17 years, but this week it's come in handy again. So every other time I've used it, it's been for half a day or some hours. now I'm having to keep the freezers and the refrigerators cold with this one. And I'm very pleased with it. Still working great. I guess it's better than having spent $8,000 on an auto start generator that I've only used a couple of times during that same 17 years. Well, this is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio. I want to take your calls in the next segments of the show. We'll be right back.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back, and we have got Ed from Ipsiety on generators. Ed, are you without power as well?
Hello, is this generator talk?
Hey, give me a break.
No, I am not without power. Pastor Rick is, so we've determined that we're going to do his show in studio, and to make it easier, I'm going to do my show in studio today. So I'm glad you guys got power.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as generators, I know we've also been ethanol talk before, and I leave the same old gas in my generator, my Y2K generator, I mean, year after year, and I go out there, and I have a can of starting fluid next to it, and I hit it, and it starts on first start and runs first pull every time. Best investment I ever made.
Yeah, I like I said, I've had this one for 17 years, and I've only used it two or three times in that 17 years. But, man, I'm happy I got it this week. And, you know, the whole ethanol thing, I have seen firsthand on some chainsaws and stuff where it totally melted the fuel pickups and stuff. It's usually, you know, it depends on what your float seats and floats and things like that in the carburetor are made out of. And if you have a old one that is all brass and stuff, then you're fine. It's the newer chainsaws and you know, line trimmers and stuff like that that don't sit well with it. So,
you know, oddly enough, I pulled a lawnmower out that had been in my shed for a number of years just to play with it, see if I get it running. And it had a brass float in it, and the brass float was full of gasoline.
Really?
How does that happen?
It has to be a bad solder joint or something.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. So here I was thinking the plastic had gone bad, but yeah. You know, because of ethanol. It was the brass. Who can you trust?
Well, you know, and it is important to have things. This is actually more so thinking about survivalist type of things than talking about this being generator talk. The fact is that if you live out in the country and you don't have, you know, it's like people that live in the city, they go, oh, gosh, this is an inconvenience, but they still have city water and stuff like that. But if you live out in the country and you're on a well, you need to have a way to get water. And that's the most important thing that your body needs regularly, especially during the summer. This could easily be 100 degrees out there. And if you don't have water, you're not going to last very long.
I wouldn't have one less than 5K either. I've known people who have a 3K and they plug in their phone charger and it dies, you know, because well, they're trying to keep their freezer in their refrigerator and save their meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got
important.
That's what I have. Mine is set up. Mine's a 5,500 with an 8,500 peak, which is actually, yeah. I would have liked to have a little bit bigger one. But you know what happened when I bought this one? And I'm sorry, guys, that we're talking about generators today.
Talking about survival.
Survival. But do you remember that time back in 2004 when the power went out in the whole eastern seaboard, right? Well, I drove all the way to Benton Harbor, Michigan, to find a generator. I've got it at a Lowe's over there, okay? I kept calling further and further west until I found somebody who had one and would set it aside for me.
Wow.
And I went and picked it up, and I got back to my home, and I just got it out of the box. I just put oil in it and just put fuel in it, and the power came on.
Okay. I saw that coming.
Yeah. So I said, well, this is the, you know, this is like the best prevention method ever, that you can, just the act of, it's like when you wash your car and it rains again, right? It's the same kind of thing.
I remember 2004. Oh, man, I don't want to take up your time, but my son was doing some work in a house for a friend, and he says, can you come over and look at this valve? So I look at the shower valve, and we're leaving, and I toggle the switch to leave it. The lights flickered, and they wouldn't come back on. He says, oh, that's something else I got to fix. I go out and drive away. It was the whole power outage, you know. I said, well, that's more than your light switch, son. But I could hear my generator run and one in the far distance run for those, what, 3 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, lifesaver. You got to have one, and it's got to be well-maintained, and buy a good one.
You know, that's what worries me, too, with things like I don't run it at night. Some people do, but I make sure that, you know, the temperatures are all cold in the fridge and in the freezer and stuff like that, and then don't touch them overnight. Shut it off, sleep for 8 hours, and start it up again in the morning.
Exactly.
But the main thing is, I mean, we butcher steers, okay? So we've got freezers full of meat. And you think about it, what you spent for that steer, if you lose that meat, you could have bought a whole house generator. Well, not quite, but you could have bought a good portable generator for that amount.
My son has a propane. I just remember he just drove up to visit. He's got a propane powered one with an electric start off a battery, off a garden battery, you know, garden tractor battery. I got to give him my extra propane bottle to take back to Connecticut. But, you know, that's not a bad route either if ease of start, because those things always start right up. You know, if you're older, if you're on your own.
With electric start, yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Mine has got a recoil start, and that was fine 17 years ago when I was younger, but and it was fine. It still is fine now for me, but for my wife, it's not. And
a starting fluid.
Yeah.
I don't even bother with it. Just hit it and pull it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, hey, thanks for the call today.
Talk to you later.
You can continue the generator talk on your show, okay?
Yeah. That's it. Okay. Talk to you later.
Great. Bye. Oh, this is so interesting for everybody who tunes in wanting to talk about guns. But it is important to think about some things, too. Making sure, like I mentioned, for water, for generators, for how many times have you thought, and do you go and you get a flashlight out and it's got dead batteries in it or something? Now, for me, none. Never. Because I keep so many batteries, I rotate my batteries, I have multiple lanterns around. I have them both in LED and incandescent just in case. These are all things to just be careful with and to make sure that you've got. Water, do you have enough jugs of water? Well, why would you need that? Well, again, if you're living in an area where you have a well, if you're not on city water, and by the way, when their pumps run out and stuff, sometimes they lose water pressure as well, okay? But to flush toilets. Well, Dick, how do you do that? Well, you can do it one of two ways. You can pour the water right in the toilet, or you can, and this is the best thing, is you take the gallon jug and you pour it into the back of the toilet. You know, you lift the top off of the tank in the back and you fill it back up with water. Then you can use it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, because, you know, what is it? If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Okay. So Derek's laughing over there. But so you got to flush toilets. Okay. And so, you need to be able to have water. So you keep jugs of water around, or empty jugs. And then when you have your event and you're running on your generator, but it's nighttime because you don't have it on, you can still flush toilets, okay? Little things like that. Now, I do want to mention, I think about the security of that too, because the matter of fact, in the city, back in during the Hurricane Katrina time frames, during some of the other hurricanes that they had down south, there was a problem that in the city, people were running generators and gangs of people would go around and listen for where the generators are and they would steal them, okay? Now, you could probably make a case that, you know, depends on the state. Like in Texas, you can protect your property. But in states like Michigan, you're only allowed to use deadly force if you feel that your life is threatened. Now, you could say, well, my life is threatened because I have to keep my insulin in the refrigerator or something. That's a stretch, okay? But the point is that if you were out there and suddenly your generator went off and you went to investigate it and somebody's out there stealing it, you are not clear to use deadly force to protect your property like that. So remember that when you're out there. You can only use deadly force. And this is not just with a CPL or something. This is for any gun owner, any homeowner, is that you can only use the firearm to protect yourself if you're in fear of death, great bodily harm, or sexual assault. And that would be for yourself, your family, or anybody else that you were trying to protect. So anyway, let's see. I keep talking about wanting to talk about revolvers. And I want to say there's two stories on revolvers that I had, and one was especially about the detective special, the Colt detective special. And I do not have one of those. I have several Colt police positives in different calibers, and they are very nice guns, but I don't have a Colt detective special. And they were a very neat gun, especially when they came out in .38 Special. Now, up until that time, people were using a lot of .32 Colt New Police, .32 Smith & Wesson. And these were like 100 grain soft points, okay? Not soft points, 100 grain lead cast, okay? And these things were only shooting about 680 feet per second, okay? And that's, I want to say, at 50 yards, that's down to 635. At 100 yards, that's down to below 600 feet per second. And we're talking, it's foot-pounds in energy with something like, at the muzzle, 100 foot-pounds of energy. At 50 yards, 88, and at 100 yards, 77. These were not very effective firearms. Okay, now, yes, it's better than being poked in the eye with a sharp stick or something like that, but it's not very good as a stopping kind of round. And you could make the case that there aren't, that a lot of pistol cartridges may not be a good stopping round, but not so much lately. All of these higher velocity 9mm with the good expanding bullets, there was a question this week that we talked about earlier in the show about 9mm out of short-barreled semi-automatics and stuff, and those are very effective rounds with very good stopping power, but the old revolvers were not, okay? Well, then they came out with the .38 Special, okay? Now, we're talking like 158 grain rounds. We're talking anywhere from 855 to 1,090, or maybe that'd be almost 1,100 feet per second. And we're talking anywhere from 250 to 415 foot-pounds of energy. So now you're getting out there into actual higher-powered rounds, like the 357 Magnums and stuff like that. That 158 grain at 1,100 feet per second is borderline almost 357 Magnum power. So I want to say, again, though, the thing is that these pistols that people used were typically 6-inch barrels, 5-inch barrels. And so if you are shooting them in an 1.875 snub nose, you're going to lose 100 feet or 200 feet of velocity, and you're going to lose some power, okay? But if it's... if what it is that you're carrying it for is essentially up close kind of things, you're going to make up for that in the fact that you're not shooting long distances and stuff. So the Detective Special came out, and it was the first ones came out. They had a square butt on them, and then they did rounded corners on them to make them more comfortable. And they actually came out with one, too. There was a conversion by a guy named Fitz, F-I-T-Z, and he did a bobbed hammer on it, which like they have on other snub noses, but he also did like a truncated trigger guard, which I've got to read up on that. If anybody knows anything about the Fitz conversions, I'm not sure that was a good idea because it left the trigger without any sort of a guard in front. We have got Tom from Northfield Township on ammo testing. Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fine, Dick. I heard earlier in the show, you know, that you had a caller or a listener, you know, wanting to know if, you know, if he could, if we could test longer barreled, you know, guns on some of the testing. And I wanted to say that it probably wouldn't make a difference, you know.
Yeah, and that, like I was saying, an extra half inch of barrel on that is, it might up it, you know, 20, 30, 50 feet per second, which would be in the direction where you want it to go with higher velocities. So,
yeah, and what they might not know is that, you know, when I'm doing that simulated bone and dirt tissue test, I am about a foot and a half away from that when I fire the gun.
Right.
I mean, that bullet's going as fast as it's going to go, and in real life, if you're in a situation, you're going to be a little far. You're going to be farther from the target.
That's true. And you, actually, you're doing the chronograph test at like 9 feet, right, with 3 yards.
Yeah, 3 yards. That's where it's comfortable for me to do it, the way I'm set up. And there are so many bullets that we did in the 9mm test. I would suggest that, you know, if he's not stuck on the HydroShock Deep, which I don't think did well in our test.
You know, I could look that up real quick. Go ahead and let me look to see.
Yeah, because there were a bunch that did very well in the test. And any bullet that does pass that test, because I test them as hard as I can.
Yeah.
And any bullet that does well in the test, those are the ones that you really want to try and use. Of course, you know, any bullet's better than none, but, you know, there are some that actually
I'm looking at, including in the bone test, the Barnes TSX, the XPD, was extremely effective. The Federal Guard Dog did a very good job, too. And I kind of like them. That's the expanding full metal jacket rounds.
Yeah, and that's one of the only ones that did well in the 45 cal test was the Guard Dog.
The Federal Law Enforcement HST did well. I'm looking to see Federal Premium. Federal HSTs did well. I mean, so many of the 9mm did outstanding. Now, here's the HydroShock Deep, and it actually did. If you look at the tests, it actually kind of deformed and did not do well as a expansion. It looks like it lost some weight too because it deformed the end of it so much. There are so many other good ones. I don't know why he would be. Matter of fact, I'm going to write him back and ask him why he's stuck on that 135 grain HydroShock Deep. Maybe. Matter of fact, to the listener, if you want to call 734-822-1600 and tell us, did it just so happen that that's what you own? Because I would say you're better off buying one of the other ones that we tested, like the Barnes TSXs and the Federal HSTs and stuff like that, and get rid of the other ones. You know what I mean? Use them as target rounds or something.
Yep, that's what I do. You know, when I test the ones that don't work, those are the ones that I use for target shooting.
You know, and there's really no reason to. I want to say right now, if you are all you've got is two boxes and that happens to be something that didn't test that well, it's still, they almost all did very well in the tissue test, but the bone test is what they failed on, right? And
yes.
And so you're still better off with that than full metal jacket target rounds. So I wouldn't go shooting them up just to say, because Dick says, Dick and Tom say, well, they're not as effective as others. They're still better than full metal jacket rounds. So, but as quickly as you can, I would select one of the other rounds that was more effective in both the tissue and the tissue bone tests. So. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Tom, for calling. I appreciate it. And I'll give you a call this week because I'm expecting to be around a little more this week and be able to maybe we can get together and do some testing. Have to talk to Theron and see if we can get together with that 5.7x28 that he's got to do a little testing too.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see how that does.
Yep. Okay. Thanks for the call, Tom.
Okay.
See you later.
Yep.
Yep. Well, I always, when I give, put out the bat signal, I can always count on Tom calling in because he's very proud of the test that we do. I'm just taking a look here now. If you're hearing about these things and you don't know what we actually did, go to my website, which is triggertalkradio.com. Okay. And then read down on the side, on the right-hand side, the column, it'll say categories. And the category says ballistic test results. So you click on that, and then it'll bring up, oh gosh, let me read in order, 22 long rifle and 20 magnum testing, 45 ACP, 9mm, 40 Smith & Wesson, and then we started, our first one was February 3rd, 2018, when we did the 380 testing. And, it's been 3 years now. There's probably some new 380s, so maybe we ought to do a follow-up on that. So there's a never-ending group of things. I can tell you this, that Tom did test, and I have to do some photography on it and put it up. Tom did test some more recent ammo. And we thought for sure it was going to be better, and it wasn't. So it very much surprised us how some brand new ammo that's coming out is not doing very well in these tests, okay? Let's see. What else we got here? Let me go back to my page. So I was talking about the Fitz conversion on the 38s. I'm going to have to talk about those. I'll have to see what we talk about next week. Let's see. The other gun that I really liked that I was interested in was the Smith & Wesson registered Magnum. Well, that's when they first came out with the 357 Magnum revolver. And I want to say when they first came out, they would sell this ultra-high-power Magnum pistol. It was the most powerful handgun in the world at the time, okay? And so they would, when they sold them, they would sell them along with a certificate that that said 357 Magnum. It was a printed certificate, nicely done with the name and address, and that you bought this registered Magnum. Now, it's kind of a marketing gimmick because there was no requirement to register it or anything. But what's really cool is that they would send it out to you in a mailing tube and everything. Well, from a collector standpoint, the gun's in nice shape, the box that it came in, the registered Magnum certificate, you know, suitable for framing. I don't know why you would do that, but, and the mailing tube it came in is very collectible. And so what happens is there was one, I want to say in 19, there was one that sold, and it sold for $12,300. And they said today, a registered Magnum in perfect condition with all of these ultra rare accoutrements, meaning the certificate and the mailing tube and stuff, would easily go for between $16,000 and $20,000. Can you believe that? Holy cow, somebody must have a lot of dough that they don't know what to do with. Because I can't afford that kind of stuff. I'm more like you guys. I have bargain guns and fun guns, and I have a lot of them. But I can't. I'm not buying any $16,000 or $20,000 revolvers. You can count on that. Well, this is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.